All right, we're in 1 Kings chapter 16. Some of you have been regulars in this study. I know some of you are in here today because the Haineses are on vacation, and we welcome you as well. But 1 Kings chapter 16 is where we are. And we're looking at a study of the kings of Israel and Judah. So, you know, you may or may not recognize a couple of the names I'm going to throw out here this morning, but do any of you recognize the name Baasha? All right, some of you may. You know, he's mentioned a few more times. But then the name Elah, E-L-A-H. You know, most of you are probably like, nope. You know, maybe I heard you mention it last week, but other than that, you know, no idea. Well, then there's Zimri. Nope, still not ringing much of a bell. You know, and the point is there's some that are more familiar than others. But we're wrapping up at the end last week. We were wrapping up with Elah, and Elah reigned 2 years. What you see, if you start comparing the timelines in 1 Kings 14, 15, 16, what you're going to find is that a partial year was counted as a whole year many times, okay? Sometimes they say, well, he reigned 2 years, but if you look at the timelines, you know, it couldn't happen, you know, like we would think of 2 full years. We would say, you know, just like kids, how old are you? 2 and a half, you know? We would be more specific with that. They reigned, you know, 2 2/3 or whatever, but, and it's not just with one. There's several instances here in 1 Kings 15, 16, 17, and even, well, 17 through 22 is Ahab. But when we get beyond that section, you know, there's several instances where a partial was counted as a full, you know, what we might call 1 1/2 or 1 1/3 or whatever, it'd be called 2 years or, you know, things like that. So if you add it all up and you don't allow for those things, the timeline gets more confusing. But we left off last time talking about Elah and how he was assassinated by his servant Zimri, right? This was, you know, this is par for the course in a lot of the world. But we left off this way, you know, even a short work time can have an impact for good or for evil. I mean, it is said of Elah that he walked in the ways of his father, the sins of his father Baasha. But, you know, the reality is, you know, if we think about it, there's probably several that we could mention, you know, that did not have a ministry as long as they thought they would. I mean, was it 3 summers ago, I think, now? I remember getting a call that my friend, evangelist Billy Abbott, you know, had a heart attack in his trailer and gone to be with the Lord. I mean, we served across town from each other. We were assistant pastor and, you know, sister churches. And, you know, had done some things together, and all of a sudden, you know, wow, okay, that was, you know, completely unexpected. And if we, you know, we start to go down the line, there's several more that we could name, right? And we could think of Ryan and Wayne Birchwell, Jenny Dietrich. Obviously, I would, you know, put my brother's name on that list as well. Aaron Thompson is a friend of mine who just died of cancer within the last 3 or 4 weeks, was a classmate in college. And, you know, the oldest of these that I've mentioned were in their 50s, several of them in 20s, 30s, or 40s. And the point I'm simply trying to make is sometimes we think, oh, well, one day I'm going to fill in the blank, right? The mindset has to be, okay, I don't know how long the Lord's going to give me, but if I only have, you know, however many years you're at now, if I only have this, or if I only have one more year, in other words, serving God should be now and not in the future. Try to tell that to the Bible college students, that ministry is not future, it's now, okay? The areas of service might be different, but, you know, some of you have military background. When you enlist in the military, when does your military service date start? Is it when you finally finish all the basic training in all the schools and you actually get to do something fun? Mm-mm. Your enlistment date starts, you know, the day they shave your head and send you to boot camp, right? I mean, that is military service. That is part of serving your country, is the training stage of it. So sometimes what you do looks different, but serving God is now. And what we see in some of these instances, all of these that we're looking at right now, we've looked at Nadab, which is another name that's not real familiar. Nadab, Baasha, Elah. We're going to look at Zimri and Omri as well. All of these served, that's five kings of Israel during the time of one king in the south of Asa. I mean, Asa was a godly king, served the Lord, and then over here you got five. So sometimes, you know, people get a good long life and a long time to serve the Lord. Sometimes you don't know what you got. But, you know, the lesson for us, we look at it and go, Elah. Okay, don't know anything about him. Next. But really, the application for us is that, okay, whatever time I have, I need to make it count to serve the Lord. All right, then that brings us to Zimri. Now, if you're not real familiar with Zimri, we'll give you a pass on that. His lineage is unknown. His upbringing is unknown. Okay. And his reign lasted all of 1 week. Okay. Look with me, if you will, in 1 Kings chapter 16. Beginning really in verse number 9 is where the story starts. His servant Zimri, captain of half his chariots, conspired against him. This is speaking of Elah. Okay, so Elah died because he was assassinated. Zimri is the one who assassinated him. All right, so we backed up to pick up the story. His servant Zimri, captain of half his chariots, conspired against him as he was in Tirzah, drinking himself drunk in the house of Arza, steward of his house. Zimri went in and smote him and killed him in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned in his stead. Verse 11, it came to pass when he began to reign, as soon as he sat on his throne, that he slew all the house of Baasha. Now, Elah was son of Baasha. So, he reigned 1 week, he assassinated Elah, and then he fulfilled the prophecy of Jehu. The first section of chapter 16, Jehu had come to King Baasha and said, because of your wickedness before the Lord, I'm going to destroy your whole house. You're not going to have a son. You'll follow you. So what Zimri did here was to fulfill the prophecy that God had given through Jehu, but he killed the whole house of Baasha. So that was, you know, Elah's father. So he killed all of Elah's relatives there. Verse 11, it came to pass when he began to reign, as soon as he sat on his throne, he slew all the house of Baasha and left him not one that pisseth against the wall, neither of his kinfolks. Notice the next phrase. Nor of his, what? Friends. That one's different. Okay? A lot of times it says they wiped out all of the family of the king to try to destroy any claim. But here, he was so paranoid or zealous or cruel or whatever word you want to use, he killed all of his friends too. He was just determined there's not going to be any successful overthrow attempt here. I'm going to be in charge. Okay? Notice verse 13. Why did this happen? End of verse 12 says that this prophecy was spoken against Baasha by Jehu the prophet. Verse 13, for all the sins of Baasha and the sins of Elah his son by which they sinned and by which they made Israel to sin in provoking the Lord God of Israel to anger with their vanities. Now that's just vanity means emptiness or worthlessness, and it's a general reference to their idolatries. Okay, verse 14, now the rest of the acts of Elah are written in the books of the Chronicles, king of Israel. Verse 15, 20 and 7th year of Asa, king of Judah, did Zimri reign 7 days in Tirzah. And people were encamped against Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines. And the people that were encamped heard say, Zimri hath conspired and has slain the king. Wherefore all Israel made Omri, captain of the host, king over Israel that day in the camp. All right, so what do we have going on here? We have an assassination. We have what would be called a coup attempt. And now we have two factions. We have Zimri, who's declared himself to be king and has a following. If I could say it this way, he was a general in the army. All right, we're told in the description here that he was over half the chariots of the king. Okay, the chariots were one of the most powerful units of the army when used well. Okay, the historians tell us that the chariots were the most feared unit of Pharaoh's army, which is why it was significant that Pharaoh brought the chariots when he's chasing Israel, when he decided, why did I let him go? I made a mistake. And when God wiped out the chariots in the Red Sea, that was very significant to Egypt's military strength. Okay? So what I'm saying is that Zimri, when he was over half the chariots, that would be, you know, like somebody being over, you know, half the, you know, fill in the blank, the tanks or the half the fighter jets or bombers or whatever we would equate it to in our military. But he was significant. So he's a general. What are we told about Omri in verse 16? We're told that Omri was captain of the host. Okay, so he was the general that was over all the soldiers. All right, so in essence, you have two generals, and one of them stages a rebellion, stages a coup, overthrows the king, and then the people are like, nah, we don't want that guy, we want this guy. So now you got two generals in the army that are fighting against each other. At this point, what's the only way for this situation to be resolved? Are they going to peaceably coexist? Doesn't matter how many bumper stickers they had on the chariots, coexist wasn't going to happen. Okay? The only way this scenario is going to be resolved is when one of them ceases breathing, right? One of these guys is going to die. Zimri or Omri, you know, it's been declared that both of them think they're to be king, so one of them is not going to continue to live. All right, so now, back in verse 16, Israel made Omri the captain of the host, king over Israel. Verse number 17. Omri went up from Gibbethon and all Israel with him, and they besieged Tirzah. And it came to pass when Zimri saw the city was taken that he went into the palace of the king's house. Now, is it possible this all happened in a week? Yes. It's also possible that he reigned 7 days, because that's how long it took Omri to move the army and surround the city. And then there's the siege here, okay? Came to pass when Zimri saw the city was taken that he went into the palace of the king's house and burnt the king's house over him with fire and died. That's, well, I mean, one, that's the coward's way out. But, I mean, I think I could, even without the, you know, the use of firearms, I think I could find, you know, quicker ways to make that happen, right? What else, though? If he went into the king's house and burnt the house over him with fire, who else do you think died in that? Whatever family he had there, whatever advisors. I mean, typically when one king succeeded another, the previous king's harem, you know, belonged as the property of the new king now. So, I mean, when it says he burned the house, it's not like he was sitting in an empty house and lit it on fire. I think there were a lot of other people that died in this with him potentially. Okay? That's also, you know, a very slow and agonizing choice there that he made. But he decided he would rather, you know, take himself out than to be captured and whatever they were going to do with him. Notice verse 19, for his sins which he sinned in doing evil in the sight of the Lord, in walking in the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin which he did to make Israel to sin. Now how long was he king? A week. But we're told that he was an idolater and he followed in the path, he followed in the sins of Jeroboam. So when had he done this? Most of that happened prior to his becoming king, don't you think? Doesn't that make sense? Okay. So even before he staged a revolt and took over the position of king, he was influencing people for idolatry. He was an avid follower of the path of Jeroboam. Okay, so even though he only reigned a week, you know, God made sure we knew that, you know, he was an idolater as well. Okay, and, you know, he ended with suicide there. Now, verse number 20, this is kind of a repeated phrase that you see a lot. The rest of the acts of Zimri and his treason that he wrought, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? When we think of that, we think, oh, 1st and 2nd Chronicles. But that's not always the case. Okay, in many cases, you know, events are not recorded in the book of Chronicles. I told you before, but 1st and 2nd Chronicles basically follows the line of David. So 1st and 2nd Chronicles follows the kingdom of Judah, and it only mentions the northern kingdom of Israel when it overlaps with, you know, as pertinent to the history of the southern kingdom, okay? So there's not another account of this in our book of Chronicles, but, you know, these chronicles were the historical records. I mean, we still have a version of that today, right? I mean, there are the records, the executive records that are preserved from one administration to another. In many cases, those become part of the presidential library that a former president will build, you know, once they are done with their time of service. And there are things that become part of the national record and all that kind of thing. But, you know, in many cases, are they not written in the book of the Kings of the Chronicles? Means the other stuff is in the history books, but this is the part that God wanted us to have in the inspired book. Okay? So that's what we have with Zimri. If you're going to stage a coup, plan it. But what you see here is God uses a variety of tools. I mean, there were times when God used a godly king like an Asa. Remember, Asa came in and he got rid of the idols and even removed his mother from being queen because of her idolatry. And sometimes God uses what we would consider good people or godly people to accomplish his purposes. In this case, what are we told about Zimri? He was an idolater. He followed in the sins of Jeroboam. He was unscrupulous. He was untrustworthy. God used him too. Now, he was a single-use tool, disposable, right? God used him for one job for a week and threw him away. But God will use a variety of tools. In other words, that this is not an advertisement to say, see, I can be wicked and God will use me. That's not the point here. God used godly servants much longer for far greater usefulness. Okay? The point I just want us to understand is there are times when God does work and it doesn't always look like what we thought it should. Right? I mean, we think, okay, it's got to look this way and, you know, I'm praying and praying and the answer's going to come and it's going to look like this. And it doesn't. Sometimes God answers the way we thought it would or leads in a way that we expected, and other times it doesn't look like what we thought it was going to. God uses a variety of methods to accomplish his purposes. What you see here with Zimri as well is we see this: God can both bless and judge someone at the same time. I use bless in parentheses because we tend to say, it's a blessing anytime something positive happens, right? So, did God bless Zimri with the opportunity to be king? Yeah, temporarily. Very temporarily, okay? But God both gave him what we would consider a good thing. I mean, if you turn on television preachers, Zimri must have been doing something right because God blessed him with a promotion in his career and, you know, riches and wealth and all of that. So obviously he was doing something right. God used him as a tool to carry out his judgment on the house of Baasha and then turn around and judge Zimri for his wickedness as well. Okay? God can work all of those things together. I would say he's playing chess while we're playing checkers, but that's really not a large enough distinction. Okay? It's more like four-dimensional chess while we play Connect Four, you know? It's God can maneuver everything to accomplish what he wants to accomplish. Okay? Even the choices of men. In fact, it makes God more glorious if he can use the choices of men rather than making all of mankind simply robots that he pushes buttons. Okay? That's even harder to do. But God both blessed and judged Zimri at the same time. And then, you know, I think this is an important thing to remember as well. Numbers 32:23, be sure your sin will find you out. Okay? Zimri was not told by one of God's servants, hey, go do this. This was just a man with political ambition who went and carried out a revolt and an assassination, and God judged him for it. He didn't last very long. He had an ignominious demise, okay? In other words, he did not die well. He died in disgrace and dishonor, okay? But did he get away with it? You know, sometimes we're like, God, why would you let them do that? Or why would you let that happen? Did God let him get away with it? Not really. But in this case, it only lasted a week. Sometimes God would let somebody like Ahab rule for 20 years before he finally judged him. So, you know, again, God works on his time schedule, not ours. All right, so now that brings us to Omri, who was the next king of Israel. Now, again, Omri is not extremely well known. But Omri's greatest claim to fame, we'll talk about here in just a few minutes. But Omri, so Zimri lasted a week. Then we have Omri. He was the captain of the army. The rest of Israel said, no, we want him. So he leads the army. They get rid of Zimri. And that brings us to verse 21. Then were the people of Israel divided in two parts. Half the people followed Tibni, son of Gimnath, to make him king, and half followed Omri. Oh, man, we're still got a division in the kingdom. Verse 22, but the people that followed Omri prevailed against the people that followed Tibni. Aren't you glad that there's no quiz on this and you have to spell these names? Omri, Tibni, Zibni, Methuselah. Supercalifragilistic, right? Okay, so Tibni died and Omri reigned. And we tend to think of that as, okay, this happened. But when you overlay the dates, there's a very good possibility that this back and forth between Omri and Tibni lasted a few years. It's, you know, comparing the dates in Kings and Chronicles, it's very likely that there was an overlap of a few years before Omri became the undisputed king. Okay, that is what lines up the best with the dates when it says, like we read here in verse 23, in the 31st year of Asa, king of Judah, began Omri to reign over Israel 12 years. Okay, but you know, that may well be when he became the full king. You know, the timelines are a little bit jumbled sometimes. All right, so he reigned over Israel 12 years, 6 years reigned he in Tirzah. So we don't know anything about his lineage. We don't know anything about his upbringing. All we know is that he was captain of the host. What do we know about his reign? Well, he began in the 31st year of Asa and reigned 12 years. Okay? My study, I think this is what happened. It was probably about 4 years that it was contested and 8 years as solo king. Okay? Which would make up this total of 12 years. All right? Now look with me in verse number 24. He bought the hill Samaria of Shemer for 2 talents of silver. And that's not an insignificant amount. A talent was a measure of weight in the Bible, right? A talent equates to our measurements. It depends on which Bible encyclopedia you look at. And honestly, it depends on which dynasty was ruling in the world at the time. There was a Roman talent and a Babylonian talent. And, you know, there were different ones, but a nice middle-of-the-road measurement. You know, on the low end, there was, I think it was the Babylonians that had a small talent and a great talent, and that was like 60 and 120 pounds. But on a nice middle point measurement that most Bible dictionaries or encyclopedias will agree on is that a talent is about 75 or 80 pounds in our measurements today. Okay? So 2 talents of silver was how much in our measurements of weight today? 150 to 160 pounds. I mean, silver is sold by the pound today, or by the ounce, or by the troy ounce, which is even less than, you know, an ounce of weight like we would think of it. Bulk silver is sold by the kilogram, okay? But, I mean, 160 pounds of silver, I'd say that was, you know, a pretty good real estate transaction, wouldn't you? But that becomes significant here in a moment. And he called the name of the city which he built after the name of Shemer, the owner of the hill of Samaria. So the name Samaria is related to, if I could say it this way, Shemaria, and it kind of became Samaria. But it was named Samaria after the name of the original owner. Verse 25, but Omri wrought evil in the eyes of the Lord and did worse than were all that were before him. Now, didn't we read that just a little while ago? Yeah, we did. Okay, we read that. About previous kings, but you know, Omri did worse than all that were before him. Now that's saying something, because who was before him? All right, what was a king of Israel? Yeah, say it louder, Larry. Jeroboam, you know, the father of idolatry in the northern kingdom of Israel, and he was worse than him. That's not insignificant. I mean, that's a pretty powerful statement. You had Baasha, who was worse than, you know, Jeroboam. But to say that he was worse than Jeroboam is an indictment that is pretty significant. Verse 26, he walked in all the way of the Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and in his sin worth he made Israel to sin to provoke the Lord God of Israel to anger with their vanities. Okay? Now the rest of the acts of Omri which he did and his might that he showed, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles king of Israel. Okay, so that's all we're told, is that he was worse than those before him, including Jeroboam. For those of you that were here when we did our, you know, study of the minor prophets, Micah chapter 6 mentions Omri as a major figure in idolatry. In his message of condemnation, Micah said, "You're being judged because you're following the statutes of Omri." Okay, or you know, his rules that he had made, his laws and such. But really, Omri is best known. All right, I got a duplicate here. Sorry about that. He was best known as the father of Ahab. Okay, that was, you know, how we would be most familiar with him. So, the other thing, it's mentioned here in verse 24 that he bought the hill of Samaria for 2 talents. After he bought that place of Samaria, he built it up into a fortified city, and then he made Samaria the capital city of Israel. Samaria remained the capital until such time as they went into captivity. But that city was still significant in the New Testament. Okay? Do you remember this statement from the New Testament of Jesus? And it said, "And he must needs go through Samaria." Same city. Okay? Why did they, in the New Testament, want to avoid Samaria? Well, because they viewed the Samaritans as less valuable, and the Israels were superior. How did they refer to the Samaritans? A lot of times as half-breeds. Why? Because the northern kingdom was captured by Assyria, which would be Turkey, you know, and up that way today, the Assyrian Empire, all right? And across the top of the Fertile Crescent a little bit. But they were captured by the Assyrians. The Assyrians' policy was to take the people they'd captured and transplant them. They'd move them all around. They'd try to break up. If they take you out of your homeland, then you're on neutral ground. It's less familiar territory. They would also mix up the people groups, which would break up the natural alliances and make it harder for people to conspire together to overthrow their captors. Okay, so the Assyrians would mix the population. That is how they took people from other places and brought them to Samaria, and that's how then the Samaritans became known as a mixed breed. Okay, well, in Israel, their lineage was very important, and those genealogies were kept very strictly down to the time of Christ, and it was important, you know, to be able to show it to that point in time. Okay, but all of that you're going to see with Samaria later on in Old Testament history and all the way into the New Testament, Omri is the one that made that city the capital. And so it, for a while, had prestige. Later on, it would be viewed as undesirable. But Omri's the one that made Samaria the capital of Israel. All right? So what are the lessons from the life of Omri? All right? Couple things I see here, and maybe you see some more. Number one, teach your children from a young age what you most want them to know about God and life. Okay? How long did Omri reign? Not very long. He reigned 12 years. I mean, but Ahab, you know, he was teaching Ahab things before he became king, right? He was teaching Ahab things in the early years of his being king. Okay, but he only reigned 12 years. Did he, you know, die, you know, as a grandpa with, you know, surrounded by a large family and all that kind of thing? No. Okay. Where did Ahab learn things? Well, from his father. I mean, that had to be one of the influences there. But what I see here is, if you don't know how long you have to teach your children, then start as early as you can teaching them the things that are the most important. Okay. That's why the Bible says train up an adult in the way he should go. Yeah, exactly. It's too late. What does the scripture say? Train up a child in the way he should go. Okay? Many of these things that you see, positively and negatively, we see this all the way back with Rehoboam. When Rehoboam was in his formative years, Solomon was in the height of luxury and all that, and that influences his choices later on. Okay? But you also see decisions made today can have an impact for generations. I mean, Omri's the one that made Samaria the capital, and that had an impact all the way down to the time of Christ, which is, you know, 800 years later or more from this point in history, maybe 900 years. Okay? What is the significance there? Sometimes what I want and, you know, what is the best long-term decision aren't always the same thing. Okay? I want large amounts of ice cream and peanut butter bars every night. Is that the best long-term decision? No. Not for my health. Not for my clothing budget. You know, there's a lot of reasons why that's not a good idea. Okay? But, you know, even when it comes to family and children and those kind of things, is it always convenient to train children? No. In fact, it seems like they conspire to act up at the most inconvenient times. And many, many times it is far more convenient to overlook it than to deal with it properly. And if you're going to train children, and I say training, you know, discipline is part of training. There's a lot that goes into it. But if you're going to do it correctly, it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And sometimes parents get off the rails because they just, quite frankly, get tired of it and they don't want to go through the effort of training children properly. Okay? But, you know, whether it's, you know, training small children or spending time, you know, working through things with the why questions when they get older, or you're helping them work through a decision-making process. They're just saying, do it and take my word for it, but teaching them how to make decisions, none of that is easy, okay? It's all time-consuming and involves effort. But those are the foundational things that impact future generations, okay? If God does let you live to, you know, see your children get married and have grandchildren and all those kinds of things, which one will you be more thankful that you did? You know, the ice cream and peanut butter bars and you know, bad diet and, you know, live with diabetes? No, that was the short-term fun, but it was a long-term problem. In the same way, we have to make decisions with a long-term view in mind. You know, and that there's broad application of that when it comes to things we would like to do, things we want to do, or things that, you know, we choose not to do in the interest of our children. There's a very broad application to that. But here, you know, Omri had trained Ahab, and what we see is that the things he taught Ahab were not desirable. I mean, Omri probably signed off on Ahab's marriage, all right? I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Who did Ahab marry? Jezebel. She was a Phoenician, the Bible says. In other words, Tyre and Sidon. She was a foreigner. Her dad was Ethbaal, who was a priest of Baal. Okay, Omri more than likely signed off on that. And if he didn't, the way he raised Ahab was such that Ahab did not see that as a major negative, never do this, right? So, there are things that we can learn even from these relatively unfamiliar names. Nadab, Zimri, Omri, Elah, partridge in a pear tree. All right, but there are things that are significant. Of course, now that brings us to Ahab. The rest of chapter 16, we have Ahab. And, excuse me. Yeah, beginning in verse number 28. Right, I looked at the wrong, I had it right on here, but I looked at the wrong thing on my. Beginning at verse number 28, from 28 to 34, this is kind of like a summary of Ahab. Okay? Then from chapter 17 through 22, which is the rest of the book of 1 Kings, we have more familiar things. Now, I know all of us are thinking, yay, more familiar things. Weird names and dates and that kind of thing. It's not as much fun. I think it's significant, okay? But in chapter 17, we have the confrontation with Elijah, okay? In chapter 18, we have the story of Elijah on Mount Carmel calling down fire from heaven. Who was the king there? Ahab. Okay, and Jezebel's priests were the ones that were killed in that confrontation. Okay, in chapter 19, we have a still small voice. I mean, that's a very familiar statement to us, you know, whether we always remember the context of that. You know, and then in chapters 20 and 21, 22, we have some about Ahab's wars. In chapter 21, we meet man by the name of Naboth. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, Naboth's the one that had a vineyard Ahab wanted, and Jezebel got it for him because he wasn't man enough to go take it for himself, but she was. Okay. But, you know, we have a lot more familiar stories in chapter 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. So really, what you see here in the end of chapter 16 is not the entire story of Ahab. It's just a summary, okay? Omri slept with his fathers, who's buried in Samaria. Ahab, his son, reigned in his stead. In the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned in Samaria 22 years. Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord above all that were before him. All right? We're not going to, this is a good place for us to stop. We're a minute or two early, but it's a good place to stop. But just, I want you to get the flow here. We've had four kings. Now we're starting on the fifth one in the north, while there's been one godly king, Asa, in the south. Okay? Godliness and doing right tends more to stability. Okay? Ungodliness tends more to instability. That's a form of God's judgment. But, you know, as we think about Ahab, just want to think about, you know, what led us up to that point, all right? But I hope that you will take what I've given you and expand on it, okay? What I'm giving you from Elah and Omri and Zimri and all that, it's not exhaustive. It's more meant to get you started thinking down those lines. You know, and I hope by the end of this you see, okay, the Old Testament, it's not just names, dates, boring, okay, I read it so I can check it off, let's go to the New Testament. The Old Testament is foundational, and there's much application for us if we will slow down and let the Lord teach us those things. Let's close with a word of prayer. Thank you, Lord.